Yeah, she's on another flight now.
Okay, good morning. The weekly shiur, as always, from Maseches Moed Katan is dedicated by David and Paula Baumzer and OMO Construction. And the weekly breakfast is sponsored by Bagel Munch, Le'u Nishmas, Shimon Ben Zev, and Fega Bas Chaim. We're doing Moed Katan Daf Tes. And we left off on Daf Ches on the Beis, talking about the reasons why you're not allowed to get married on Chol Hamoed. And there were a few reasons offered. One was Lufish Ein Marvin Simcha B'Simcha, that we have a principle that you can only do one Simcha at a time. It's not appropriate to double up Smachos. And Chol Hamoed itself, or Yontif, is considered a Simcha, and wedding is considered a Simcha, so it's not appropriate to do that together. Another was Niach Simchas Aregav Osek B'Simchas Ishto, that you're going to push off, that the simcha of your of being with your wife is going to kind of override and supersede and minimize the simcha of yontif. That's not appropriate. One is because mipnei haTorah, we don't want you to be too busy preparing for a wedding and therefore ignore the preparations and the appropriate celebrations for yontif. So there were a few different reasons. And then the Gemara now says at the bottom, Meisfei. Kol Eilu She'amru, on the very bottom line of Ches Amud Beis, Kol Eilu She'amru Asurin Lisa, Kol Eilu She'amru Asurin Lisa B'moed Mutarin Lisa Erev HaRegel. So you're allowed to do it on Erev Yontif. You're allowed to do it on Erev Yontif, meaning the only prohibition was on getting married on Chol Hamoed itself. But Erev Yontif is okay. So the Gemara says, Kashil Kulu. For all the different reasons that we gave for why it would be prohibited to do it on Yontif itself, on Chol Hamoed, those should also apply to Erev Yontif. This is a kasha. This brisa that says that you're allowed to do it in Erev Yontif presents a problem or challenge to all the reasons we gave. So the Gemara now is going to go through each of the reasons and explain why that's not a problem. Well, kasha, it's not a problem. Man diomre mishum simcha ikar, simcha chad yumu. So the one opinion was that because you don't want to override the simcha of yontif of Chol Hamoed, and so to do it on erev yontif, says the Gemara, that's not going to present a problem, because even though the wedding is not just the day of the wedding, but there's shavu brachos that follow it, and it goes for multiple days. However, simcha yom chad yumahu, I read it wrong. That's why I'm getting all confused. The main simcha is the first day. And so even though the wedding celebration is continued for several days thereafter, the main simcha is the first day. And if the first day that you're doing it, the main simcha is Erev Yontif, so that's not a problem. It doesn't cause a problem for your simcha. The rest of Yontif, Iker Simcha Chad Yumahu, and therefore it's not a problem. You could do it on Erev Yontif. So another reason that we gave on the previous Amud was that your wedding preparations are going to conflict with your Yontif preparations, your Yontif Simcha. But Iker Tircha Chad Yumahu, there too, even though it might take up extra efforts the rest of the days of Shavuos, but the Iker is the first day. And the first day here we're going to be doing on Erev HaRegel, on Erev Yontif, and so therefore it's not going to conflict with the Simchas Yom Tov. That's not a problem. So another reason we said on the previous Amud was that if you allow people to schedule their weddings for Chol Hamoed, they're going to push, let's say someone gets engaged in the middle of the summer, they're going to push off the wedding until Sukkos. And that's a problem, bitul period. We want people to get married as soon as they get engaged. We want people to get going with the wedding right away. But they're going to push it off because they're going to save money on a suda. Instead of having to make a whole wedding feast in the middle of the summer, they'll just push it to Chol Hamoed and double up their suda's yontif. And that's a problem. We don't want people pushing off their wedding. So the Gemara says, L'chad yuma lo mashi inish nafshei. For one day, people are not going to push it off. So Rashi, this requires a little explanation. Rashi explains that what's going on here is people are going to be worried that if they push off their wedding a few months to celebrate it on Chol Hamoed, so that's doable. But if the only day that's permissible to do it is Erev Yontif, so people are not going to take the risk of pushing it off a few months and then hoping that things work out for that day and there's no delay, anything can happen, weddings can get delayed, some unforeseen circumstance could occur, and then they're up the creek because then they're out 7 days, they know they can't do it the rest of Chol HaMoed, they can't do it on the rest of Yontif. So if the rule were to be that the only day you could have your wedding is Erev Yontif, as it is, we're not worried that people are going to push off the wedding by a few months to push it to Yontif so they could double up on the meal, because they're not going to want to take the risk that something is going to happen and then they're out 7 days. That's the way Rashi explains that. So the bottom line is, none of the reasons that we gave for why you can't do a wedding on Yontif, on Chol HaMoed, conflict with this assertion now that the Braisa says that Mutar and Lisa Erev HaRegel, that you could do a wedding on Erev Yontif, and in fact, the halacha is you could do a wedding on Erev Yontif. So now the Gemara says, "Udein ma'arvin simcha b'simcha minalan." One of the reasons we gave was this concept of "ein ma'arvin simcha b'simcha," that we don't double up on smachos, and that's the reason why you can't do a wedding on Chol HaMoed, because it's doubling up on simcha. So where's the source for this? How do we know this concept, the "ein ma'arvin simcha b'simcha"?
If you did it, would you be married?
If you did it, you'd be married, I think. Yeah, I think believe so. Yeah. "Udein ma'arvin simcha b'simcha minalan." How do we know that's true? Dichsiv, and we quote a pasuk from Malachim Aleph talking about the Chanukas Beis HaMikdash, when Shlomo built the first Beis HaMikdash, so there was a big party for that. And dichsiv, Vayas Shlomo Ba'isa Hi Esachag, he celebrated Sukkot that year, V'chol Yisrael Imo, Kahal Gadol Milavo Chamas HaNachom, Yisrael, everyone came, V'fnei Hashem Elkeinu, Shivas Yamim, V'shivas Yamim, for 7 days, and for 7 days, Arba Asar Yom, 14 days total. So we see there that the culmination of the Binyan Beis HaMikdash, of the construction of the Beis HaMikdash, took place around Sukkot time, and they could have just doubled up the celebration and had 7 days of celebration commemorating Sukkot and the Chanukas HaMikdash at the same time, but they didn't do that, and instead the Pasuk says they celebrated 7 days, and 7 days separately, 14 days total. So we see from there that Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha. The Gemara concludes, Vim Isa, the Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha, and if in fact you were able to, if there, in fact the rule was you were allowed to double up Smachos, Iboy Le'Lemintar Ad HaChag, U'Me'avet Shiva L'Hacha L'Hacha. What he should have done, or what he could have done, would be to wait until Sukkot started, and then go straight into Sukkot with a big celebration that would double up L'Hacha L'Hacha and would perform both purposes. Tosfos says, if you look at the very little Tosfos at the top, not only would this have been a practical thing to do, but it's what he would have done, what he should have done. Why? Everyone had to take off 14 days from work. They lost all their vacation days doing this, all right? And they could have, Shlomo HaMelech could have saved them the 7 days of vacation by just doubling up the Simcha. And the fact that he went out of his way and didn't do that, the fact that he actually celebrated and made them take 14 days of vacation days, shows that that he felt constrained in some way, and that's the source for Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha.
Cool. It's interesting to see that he's bringing down like a concept of Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha from like thousands of years after Matan Torah, like the second base of Mikdash, when Shlomo, that's when Shlomo
right.
was the second base of Mikdash. So
the first base.
Then are you bringing down like almost a halacha concept?
Right, it's a good question. You're saying, I mean, is this Daraisa? Is it Divrei Kabbalah? It's just a concept. I suspect that it's more a, meaning it's, you don't count this as one of the 613 mitzvahs. Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha is a guiding principle. It's not a mitzvah in a formal sense. And so it's not as uncomfortable kind of learning it from the Nevi'im rather than the Torah. So a lot of times you come into that problem where you have a mitzvah, I can't think of an example, a mitzvah that's derived from a pasuk in Tanakh, in Nach, rather than in the Torah, and then the Gemara asks, well, what did they do until then? And the Gemara answer is, maybe it's Halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai, and then it was just later on, it was codified here it's not so much of a formal mitzvah, rather just a rule of operation of Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha. But the point, your point is well taken. This is a later source, but it's not in the Torah. Okay, so the Gemara then says, how do we know that proves to you that Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha? V'dilma mintar lo natrinan, Veicha disrami avdinan. Maybe the only thing that this proves is that you can't push off a simcha to Yantif, and that's why Shlomo Melch didn't kind of engineer the construction to end at that time, and he had it ended when it ended a full 7 days before Sukkot. And the only thing that you're not allowed to do is dimwal minter and lonatrina. And maybe it's just that he's not allowed to merge the smachos because he was compelled to build without delay. Veicha disrami avdinam, but where it happens, just so happens that your simcha falls out on Yontif, so then you can double up smachos. And so, for example, let's say people decide to get married, and they want to get married tomorrow, and tomorrow happens to be, you know, Chol Moed Sukkos, so maybe that would be okay. A spontaneous celebration that happens to double up with another simcha would be okay. And the only thing here that we can derive from Shlomo Melch is that you can't engineer it to happen later. You can't kind of push off what would otherwise be a simcha that would happen. So the Gemara says, Iboile l'shiurei porta. He could have kind of engineered the culmination of the BMA to happen spontaneously at Yontif. And so the fact that he didn't do that shows that you can't do that. That Amar Zimcha of Zimcha. The right answer is no. Shiri BMA Smigdash Lomi Shairinan. Shlomo Melch, in fact, couldn't engineer the construction to go a little longer and happen spontaneously at the same time as Sukkos, because once you're building a base of Migdash, you have to do it bezrizus, you have to do it without delay, and so therefore it would have been inappropriate in its own right for Shlomo Melch to delay the Binyan base of Migdash to happen in a way that it would just so happen to happen on Yontif. So Gemara then says, Iboile l'shiurei ba'amla kliya urev. Well, that's true that you're not allowed to delay the building of a Beis HaMikdash in terms of the Iker construction of the Beis HaMikdash. But there are some parts of the Beis HaMikdash that are constructed that aren't as important as other parts. So the fundamental part of the structure, you're right. He couldn't have delayed that in order to just so happen to coincide so that the building, the culmination of the building would just so happen to coincide with it. But there are other things that he could have done, kind of accoutrements, such as Rashi and Tosos, I think, both explain, the Ama Kliya Orev is a kind of part of the roof of the Beis HaMikdash that was built in a way that would not allow birds to perch atop the Beis HaMikdash. Rashi explains that the roof of the Beis HaMikdash had an incline, but there was a certain part that wasn't inclined, and that would attract birds to stay there. And so they built it kind of spikes that stuck up to it so that birds would not come there. And Tosos explains that there was a practical reason for this, that Tuma wouldn't end up on top of the Beis HaMikdash. And so this was not an integral part of the Binyan Beis HaMikdash, and so it wouldn't have been subject to the rule of Shiri Binyan Beis HaMikdash Shlomo Shairinan, that you have to build it on schedule and you can't delay it. So why didn't Shlomo Melch, what the Gemara is saying here is, why didn't Shlomo Melch just delay that accoutrement, that minimal, that minor part of the building, and thereby just end the Beis HaMikdash, the building Beis HaMikdash at the time of Yontif, and that would have, at that point, allowed him to be Marvin Simcha of Simcha. So the Gemara says, Ama Kliya Orev Tzorach Binyan Abayasu. The Gemara says, no, you misinterpreted how unimportant the Ama Kliya Orev. In fact, the Ama Kliya Orev is a very important part of the Beis HaMikdash. As Tosfos says, it's actually meant in terms of Chashash of Tuma. It's meant to keep away Tuma. And therefore, it's an integral part of the Beis HaMikdash. And there, that too is subject to the rule of Shiri Binyan Beis HaMikdash Lo B'Shairinan. He couldn't delay the building of that, even that part, and he had to keep on building. So the Gemara then falls back to a variation of the limud. Ela midemayser kra, midemayser kra. From the fact that this pasuk describing the timing of the celebration of the Beis HaMikdash has extra words. Michtek siv arba asar yom. The pasuk says, and it could have just said, 14 days, their celebration was 14 days long. 2 days long. Shivas yamim vishivas yamim lamali. And so why did the pasuk have to go out of its way to say 7 days plus 7 days equals 14 days. Shmamina hani uchud v'hani uchud. To go, the pasuk is going out of the way to teach you this principle of ein marv and simcha v'simcha. Ein marv and simcha v'simcha. Okay. So the Gemara now continues. Amar of Parnach, Amar of Yochanan. Osa shana lo asu Yisrael as Yom HaKippurim. So as we just learned, their celebration for the inauguration of the Beis HaMikdash lasted 14 days, and the first 7 days was the celebration for the Beis HaMikdash, and that then ended, and then that coincided with the beginning of Sukkot. So their celebration for the Beis HaMikdash would have overridden Yom Kippur, right? Yom Kippur is only a few days before, it's four days before Sukkot. And so their celebration for the Beis HaMikdash would have overridden Yom Kippur. So these Amoraim explain that that year they didn't commemorate, they didn't celebrate Yom Kippur, they didn't fast Yom Kippur. Vayudogim v'omrim, and as you would expect, they were a little worried. V'omrim shema nischaivu sonin sheYisrael kliya. This is a euphemism, right? They were worried that maybe they were subject to destruction, that Hashem would punish them. So Neim Shal Yisrael literally means the enemies of Yisrael.
They thought about it after the fact?
They thought about it after the fact. Well, Gora is going to talk about what their line of reasoning was. But they were worried on some level that they would be punished for overriding Yom Kippur with this celebration. However, Yatzza Basko V'amra Lahem, Basko came out and reassured them, Kuchem Uzumanim Achaya Olam Haba. You are all destined for Olam Haba. Don't worry, you didn't lose your Olam Haba. You didn't commit any terrible offense here by skipping Yom Kippur this year. You were justified in doing so. So the Gemara then immediately launches into, well, my Darish, what was their basis for skipping Yom Kippur? How did they justify this? On what basis did they do this? So Amru Kal V'chomer. They reasoned to themselves a Kal V'chomer. They said, Umam Mishkan. The Mishkan, right, the Mishkan was the temporary version of the Beis HaMikdash that was in the Midbar. So Umam Mishkan, She'en Kedushaso Kedushaso. Mishkan is on a lower level because it's not a permanent structure, as opposed to the Beis HaMikdash. So the Mishkan, which was not permanent, it was only temporary, V'karban Yachid, and its inauguration consisted of various Karbanos Yachidim of the Nesiim, I read a few weeks ago, right? The Nesiim brought their Karbanos, so they were Karbanos Yachid. So that's also on a lower level. Again, so the Mishkan was only temporary. The Karbanos that inaugurated it were only Karban Yechidim. And yet, Doche Shabbos, Diser Skila, that process was Doche Shabbos, which is very chamur. It's an Iser Skila. You can't be Doche, right? Your Shabbos is a big deal. So, Kal V'chomer, they said, Mikdash, the permanent Beis HaMikdash, the Kedushas HaKedushas Olam, which is a very big deal. It's a permanent structure. It's a permanent Beis HaMikdash. V'Karban Tzibor, and its inauguration is done through Karbanos Tzibor, through public offerings of the Chanukah Sabbais. Those were Karbanos Tzibor. V'Yom HaKippur, and on the other hand, Yom HaKippurim Darnish Kares, Yom Kippur is not quite as chamor as Shabbos in the sense that its punishment is Kares as opposed to Skila. That's a little counterintuitive, right? But that's what their reasoning is. So lo kol shekein, so all the more so, we should be able to override Yom Kippur to celebrate the inauguration of the permanent Beis HaMikdash if we were able to override Shabbos to inaugurate the temporary Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan. So that sounds like a pretty good Kal V'chomer, the Gemara thinks. So the Gemara then says, El Amayhu Yudogim. Why were they worried then? If they had come to this conclusion based on a Kal V'chomer, why does the Gemara say that they were worried that they would lose their Olam Haba, that they would be subject to a destruction? So the Gemara says, well, there was a countervailing consideration that might have undermined this Kal V'chomer. Hasam tzorech gavoa, hacha tzorech hedyot. As Rashi points out, when it came to the Mishkan, so those were just karbanos that constituted their celebration, which were presents to Hashem. And so maybe that rightfully overrode Shabbos. But hacha tzorech hedyot, here, the celebration consisted not only of karbanos, but also of a yemei mishta, a feast of celebration. And so therefore, maybe that wasn't justified, even though the karbanos of the Mishkan in contravention of Shabbos would have been justified. So the Gemara then says, well, if that was their concern, then hachanami, neved l'avdu, do the karbanos, but just don't eat. Meaning leave out that component, leave out the party part, and just do the karbanos. So the Gemara says, no, ein simcha bo achila v'shtia. That wouldn't be a real celebration. You can't have a real celebration without eating and drinking. That would have been improper in light of the monumental achievement of building the Beis Hamikdash and the inauguration of the Beis Hamikdash. That would have been improper. And so if they're going to do it, they're going to do it the whole way. And that's why they were worried. Even though they had a Kal V'chomer, there were some ways you could make a pirch on the Kal V'chomer. You could kind of question the validity of the Kal V'chomer. So they were worried until finally Hashem, the Baskol, came and reassured them that don't worry, you're going to be okay.
So from this pasuk, we can go back and a rabbi glass of the proper kiddush needs a l'chaim.
That's right. That's right.
You agree.
That's
okay.
That's clearly the that's right. The Shvus Yaakov, I saw in a sefer, the Shvus Yaakov, who's a sefer of Shilos and Shuvas, the Shvus Yaakov points out that this concept of them being worried, even though they had a Kal V'chomer, kind of reflects the fact that there's such a thing as a mitzvah imaver biyachad, that you have a concept where you maybe, the Kal V'chomer teaches you something, and that there is a that kind of wins the day. They were permitted to celebrate in this way, but at the same time, their overriding of Yom Kippur was maybe in a sense a mitzvah maver v'yachad. That at the end of the day, that was what they were supposed to do. But there was some element of them questioning their practice. So the Shvus Yaakov says that in other instances, such as this, where you're kind of doing the right thing, but on the other hand, you're overriding something. And the example he gives is a Tainis Chalom, right? There's a concept that if you have a very, very disturbing dream, you should have a Tainis the next day. You should fast in order to do some kind of kapara to avert any kind of results of that terrible dream, that it shouldn't ever kind of come to fruition. And the halacha is that that even overrides Shabbos. So if you have a Tainis Chalom, if you have a bad dream, you could even fast on Shabbos in order to override that. But the thing is that the Gemara says that if you do that, you should make up, you should do a tashlumin, and you should fast another fast during the week to make up for the quasi-avera of missing out on Shabbos, of fasting on Shabbos. The Gemara says, v'takante d'leisuv ta'anisa la'tanisa, that you should sit a fast, that you should make a fast as a kapara for the fast that you did overriding Shabbos. And so the Shvus Yaakov says here, why, maybe you might have thought that here too, or he asks, why here they didn't fast another day to make up for the missed day of Yom Kippur. And he says very interestingly that they didn't do that specifically because they were choshesh, that if they did that year, they skipped Yom Kippur and then made up a fast day later on, people might derive from that halacha that if it's a little difficult for you to fast the Yom Kippur, so fine, eat that fast, it would make like a Pesach Sheni kind of situation, fine, you could eat on Yom Kippur as long as you make it up a few days later by fasting a different day. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to stay far away from any kind of implication from that. They realize Yom Kippur is a big deal, you can't just skip a fast because you have a little headache on Yom Kippur and make it up with another day. And so therefore, Shvus Yaakov says, interestingly, that they didn't do that. They just skipped Yom Kippur that year. They said, okay, we're done. We'll do it next year. But they didn't make it up with another fast day. Okay. The Gemara now continues and says, U'mishkan d'dachi Shabbos minal. And how do they know from the first instance, right? In the Kal V'chomer, they derived it from the example of the Mishkan, which was Docha Shabbos. They brought those karbanos on Shabbos. How do they know that? How do we know that the Mishkan is Docha Shabbos? So the Gemara says, Ilei mamidichsiv bayom harishon of yom hashvi'i. When it talks about these karbanos of the Nisim, it says bayom harishon, then yom sheni, shlishi, etc. Yom bayom hashvi'i, on the seventh day, that sounds like it says the seventh day of the week, and that maybe is a good explanation of how they derived that they could bring these karbanos and midocha Shabbos for the Chanukah Samishkan. The Gemara says, no, Dilma Shvi'il Karbanos. Maybe that's just talking about the seventh day of Karbanos, but it doesn't mean to say that on the seventh day of the week you could do it. So Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, here's how they derived it. Amar Akrab Bayom Ashtei Asar Yom. On the 11th day, right? My Yom Kulo Ratzuf Af Ashtei Asar Kulan Ritzufin. It's the fact there's an extra yom here, right? It didn't have to say b'yom ashtei asar yom. There's an extra word yom here. So they darshan that extra word yom to mean just like a day is continuous, right? A day is 24 hours. You don't skip any parts of the hours. A day means a day. So af ashtei asar kuan ritzufin, so too these 11 days were continuous. They didn't skip a day. They didn't skip a day, meaning they did it even on Shabbos. The Gemara then says, v'dilma yomim haruyim, V'dilma yom maruyim. Well, you can derive that they didn't skip a day, but that maybe that just means they didn't skip a day of the days that they don't have to skip. But Shabbos, they obviously had to skip because it was Shabbos. They couldn't bring Karbanos on Shabbos. And so maybe thus all this means is that they just did this, the 11 days as they were supposed to, but obviously they skipped Shabbos. So Gemara says, no, k'siv k'rachrina, but there's another pasuk, B'yom Shneimasar Yom, where there's an extra Yom there also. On the 12th day, B'yom Shneimasar Yom, so the word Yom is extra. Ma Yom Kuo Ratzuf HaShneimasar Yom Kuo Mritzufim. Same drasha, that just like a day is continuous, so too these were 12 consecutive days. V'dilma Hacha Nami Yom Maruyim. Maybe there too it means consecutive days you're allowed to bring the karbanos, but obviously skipping Shabbos. The Gemara says no. Imkain tre kray lamali. Why did it have to bring a second time? Right? We have the same lima that seems to be deriving from biyom ashtei asar yom and neyom shnei masar yom. So why did the pasuk have to say an extra yom, not just once but twice? From there we derive that it was docha Shabbos. That this idea of Yomim ha yomim that my yom kula ratzav avshneimasar yom kula ritzufim applies straight through the week, even overriding Shabbos. Okay, and then the Gemara kind of brings the whole thing home. Mikdash to docha yom kippur mino, and how do we know that mikdash was docha yom kippur? And as we said, ilayim midichsiv arbaasar yom v'doma yomim haruyim. If you say that it's from the idea that it says 14 days, well, maybe that just means 14 days. Of days when you're allowed to do it, when you're allowed to be mesameach and eat and drink, but maybe you have to skip Yom Kippur. Gomar Yom Yom Mehasam. They learned it from the previous thing. I think what this Gemara is just doing is simply just reviewing and saying they had the Kal V'Chomer that we said above that they learned from the Mishkan to the Mikdash. Okay. Yatsasa Baskol V'Amro Lahem Kulchem Mizuman Mechay Olam Abba. The Baskol called out that, don't worry, you didn't do anything wrong. You are all destined to Olam Haba. You don't have to worry, you didn't do anything wrong. So the Gemara says, Minolan da'achiluhu. How do we know that, in fact, Hashem had forgiven them, that this was all okay? The Tani Tachlifa Bayom Hashmini Shalach Hasa'am. Right, and there's this idea the Gemara said, this is just the Gemara, that a Baskol came out and reassured them that they had done the right thing. So how do we know this from the psukim itself? How did the Amoraim know this? That's the Gemara answer explains that they knew it from the pasuk itself. It says Vayom Hashmini on the eighth day, Shalach Esam, he sent out the nation. Vayivarchu Asamelch, they blessed the king. Vayolchu Aleim, they went to their tents. Smeichim v'tovei lev, they were happy and they were content. Al kol atova asher asa Hashem with David avdo uYisrael amo. For everything that all the good things, all the happy things that Hashem had done for David and his nation. So the Gemara now darshins what each of those components of the pasuk mean. Uyahalayim, it says that they returned to their tents. Shaholchu umatzu nishayim bitara. They went home and they found that their wives were tahar and they were able to be their wives. Smeichim, what does it mean that they were happy? Shenenu miziv hashchina, that they had benefited, they had derived pleasure from the shchina. V'tovei lev, what does it mean that they were content? Shekol echad v'echad nis'abra ishto b'ben zachar. That immediately, or right in the aftermath of this whole celebration, each of their wives became pregnant with a male, with a son. And then finally, Al Kol HaTova, what does it mean that they were thankful and content with all the goodness, Al HaTova? That's referring to the fact, Shiyatzasa Baskol V'Omra Lahem Kulcha Mizumanim L'Chaya Olam Haba. That's the source for this idea that a Baskol came out and reassured them that they were destined to Olam Haba, that they had not done anything wrong in overriding Yom Kippur. And the Gemara, then the pasuk continues, Lo David Avdo Yisrael Amo, that they were content in celebrating all the fact that of all Hashem had done for David his servant and for his nation Israel. Bishlomo Yisrael Amo Da'achiluhu Avon Yom Kippur. So we understand what it means that they were all happy about what Hashem had done for the nation. That's referring to the fact that Hashem had forgiven them for violating Yom Kippur. David Avdo Mahi. What's it talking about David here? So I'm Rav Yudah Marav. That at a time that Shlomo HaMelech wanted to bring the Aron into the base of Mikdash, the gates closed on him. He couldn't get in. Amar Shlomo Esrim V'Arba Rinanos. So Shlomo HaMelech said 24 songs, and Rashi explains that the Sukkim there in Malachim go through or hint to the specific songs he said. V'lonana, and he wasn't answered. Pasach v'amar sushar shar marsheichem. So then he said the pasach from Tehillim. He started saying sushar marsheichem. Please, you know, open the gates. V'lonana, it didn't work. The gates stayed closed. Kevan sh'amar Hashem alokim al tashay p'nei mishichecha. Zachar uchaste David avdecha, but then he said this sentence. He said, Hashem, please remember the goodness of David, your servant. Miad nana, and he was immediately answered, and the gates were opened, and he was able to bring the aron into the base mikdash. But osa shah, and at that moment nefchu pnei sone David kushuay kedera. All the enemies of David who had criticized David for the chatayim that he had done, specifically the chait with Bathsheba, they all of a sudden realized that Hashem was on the side of David. V'yadu akol, and everyone knew Shemachol HaKadosh Baruch Hu Osa Avon, and they knew that Hashem had forgiven David for that sin. Okay. Rabbi Yonasan ben Asamai, Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim, Tanu Parshas Nedarim Bei Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So these two Amoraim, Rabbi Yochanan ben Amasai and Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim, they learned the Parsha of Nedarim in the house of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Iftar Minei Biursa. And then they left him at night. After spending the day learning Torah with him, they departed. With Safra, Hadur, become Miftari Minei. In the morning, they came back, and they said goodbye to him again. So Amar Lahu, so he said to them, Rav Shimon Yochai said to them, V'lav iftirisu minai b'urta, didn't you already say goodnight to me when you left last night? So Amar Lahu, they said to him, V'matatana Rabbeinu, you taught us Talmud sheniftar me'rabo. There's a rule that if a Talmud says goodbye to his Rebbe, he leaves his Rebbe, Vilan Boso Ir, but he doesn't leave the city. He goes to sleep in that same city. He hasn't yet left. Sarach Lifter Mimenu Pamacheris. He has to come back the next morning and say goodbye again. Shnemar Bayom Hashmini Shalach Hasam Vayivarach Vasamelch. Because the Pasuk, these Pasukim that we're recording here with respect to Shlomo HaMelech, it says that on the eighth day, he sent them, he said goodbye to them, Vayivarach Vasamelch, and they blessed the king. And then it says, "Uksiv biyom esrimu shlosh al chodesh hashvi shalach hasam." The pasuk then says that on the 23rd day of the month, he sent the nation away again. The eighth day corresponds to the 22nd day of the month, because 8 days after the beginning of Sukkot, right, is 22. And here on the 23rd, they're saying it again. Ela mikan, we derive from this, l'talmud shaniftar meirabo v'lan bo'usla'ir, the rule is that if you leave your Rebbe, if you say goodbye to your Rebbe, but then you stay over the night, you have to go back to him the next morning before you leave the city. Okay. So that was that exchange. So then Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said to Amar Le'Levrei. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said to his son, B'nei Adam Halalu Anashim Shel Tzurahim. He says, these two men These two men, Rabbi Yochanan ben Amasi ben Asamaya and Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim, they are good men, or Rashi says they're chachamim. They're very smart men, maybe because of this exchange, maybe because of the way they had been learning earlier. He says these are good guys. Zilga behon duvar chucha. Go follow them and get a bracha from them. So Azal, he went, Ashkechinhu to karamu kroy adadi. Excuse me. So Rav Shimon Yochai's son went, and he followed them, and he noticed that they were talking in Torah, and that they had asked the contradiction of two psukim. On the one hand, k'siv plas peles ma'agal raglecha v'chol terchecha yachonu, which literally means make level the path of your feet and let all your ways be established. But the idea is that make level the path of your feet is the idea of prioritize mitzvos. If you have two mitzvos to do, you have to kind of figure out which one is more important and do that one first. And yet, uksiv, and then it says, ora chayim pentifaleis, that just, like, do the right thing, lest you level out the path of your life. Implying that don't be so careful to do this, just kind of do it, right? So, the Gemara says, right, Rashi says, the mashma kol mitzvah shetovo yodcha, aseo sa ben gadol ben katan, aval tenach katan ben gadol. Meaning the first pasuk implies that you should kind of evaluate the various mitzvot and then choose the one that's more important and do that. And the second pasuk implies just whatever mitzvah comes to you, just do it. And don't be so medaktik into which is more important. The Gemara answer is gol kasha. The two pasukim don't contradict him. Not the Gemara answers, but these two, Rabbi Yochanan ben Asamaya and Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim, they answered, it's not a problem. Gol kasha kan b'mitzvah she'efshar l'asos ha'yidei acherim. That one pasuk is talking about the pasuk that says that you should make level, that you should kind of figure it out. That's where it's not possible for other people to do it, and therefore you're faced with two mitzvahs, you got to figure out how the priority. However, the other pasuk is talking about mitzvah she'ef shel asos ha'yedei acherim, you're left to do both, and then you have to kind of evaluate how to accomplish both. Fine. Hadar yas vivakomi bayuhu. So then they had another contradiction. These two rabbis were talking about. They asked the contradiction from the following pasuk. Siv yikarahim ipnimim v'chol chavatzecha lo yishvu ba. That the Torah is more precious than rubies. V'chol chavatzecha lo yishvu ba. And you should put aside any other dealings that you have. Nothing compares to the Torah. But that implies that it's only kolchafatzechel yishvubach. Only your own matters should you put aside. But chefse shemayim, that implies that if it's a mitzvah, that you should not put aside. And in fact, your mitzvah should override your Torah learning. If you're learning Torah and a mitzvah comes along, you should do the mitzvah. And then the pasuk says, or a different pasuk says, that all your matters, meaning even chefse shemayim, should be set aside in favor of Torah learning. So which one is it? Dafiu chefse shemayim yishvuba, that even mitzvos don't compare to the Torah, meaning that your Torah learning overrides everything. So which one is it? Do mitzvos override Torah learning, or does Torah learning override mitzvos? And they answered, kan b'mitzvah she'efshar la'asos ha'yidei acherim. One's referring to where someone else could do that mitzvah, and in that case, you should not disturb your Torah learning. You should keep on learning Torah because someone else could pick up the mitzvah. Whereas a mitzvah that only you could do, only you know, have that expertise, only you can do that mitzvah, there, the mitzvah overrides the Torah learning. You have to put aside your Torah learning and attend to the mitzvah. Fine. So they had made these two drashos. And then they noticed Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's son is hanging around and watching them, listening into their conversation. So Amruei, they said to him, "My boy Yisacha, what are you doing here? How can we help you?" So Amru Lahu, so Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's son said to them, "To Amru Li Abba, my father told me, Zil Gabayhu Duvarchucha. My father advised me to follow you guys to get a bracha from you because you're so smart." So Amruei, so they said the following bracha to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's son, which, as you'll see, doesn't sound like much of a bracha. Yehi Rava, it should be the will of Hashem, detizra v'lo tachzad. You should sow, you should plant, and you should not reap. meaning you should plant plants, and then it sounds like he's saying nothing should come of it. You should not reap. Ta'ayo v'lo tefuk. You should go and not receive. Rashi explains that means literally that you should kind of make merchandise for selling, and then no one should buy it. Tefuk v'lo ta'ayo. You should go and not bring. That's Rashi explains. That's means that you should go to a faraway place to get schora, to get merchandise, and then not somehow be able to export it, right? Lecharav beisacha, your house should be destroyed. Velesov ishbizcha, and you should stay in a lodging house. Levavel peturcha, your table should be all confused. Velotechse shasa chadasa, and you shouldn't live out the year. So this was the bracha they gave to him, which sounds like a terrible, terrible bracha. So ki asol gabe avua. So now he kind of turned around and said, okay, thanks very much for the bracha. And he went home back to his father, who had given him the brilliant advice of go getting a bracha from these two chachamim. So Amr Lei, so he said, he went to his father and he said, Amr Lei, lo mi boy de baruchei lo beruchun. It wasn't just that he didn't give us the bracha. That would have been not so terrible if he didn't give us a bracha. Avat zuri tzura, and all he did was trash talked us. This is a terrible, terrible advice. Why did I go to get a bracha for them? So Amr Lei, my Amrulcha. So the father said, Rishon Meyachai said, okay, what did he say to you exactly? Hachi vachi Amru Lei. So he said, this is what he told him. He told him over the trash talk that he had said. So Amr Lei, so Rishon Meyachai said, Hanach kuku birchasa ninu. In fact, that all was a bracha. And now he's going to explain to him how this seeming curse was really a bracha. Tizra v'lo tachzud, which meant you should sow and not reap. Tolid banim v'lo yamusu. That means he was giving you a bracha that you should have a sons, and that they shouldn't die. You should sow and not reap. That you should have sons, but then leave it as is. It shouldn't die. Ta'ayo v'lo tefuk. That means you should go and not bring. Meaning which we had understood literally meant that you should kind of create merchandise but not sell it. Ta'ayo kalasa. That you should have daughters-in-law, that your sons should get married, but your sons should not die in a manner that would have caused your daughter-in-law to leave. Tepuk v'lotayil, which we had said literally means you should procure merchandise from far away but not be able to import it. Tolid bansa v'loyamusu gavrayu v'lihadru lusayich. That your daughter, you should give birth to daughters, you should have daughters, but not have their, and then I guess marry them off, and not have your son-in-laws die in a manner that would cause your daughters to return back to your home. Lecharuv beisecha, which meant, lecharuv beisecha v'lesuv ushpizcha, your house should be destroyed and you should end up living in a hotel. So he says that is referring to the fact that Hai Alma Ushpizcha, Vahu Alma Besa, Dechsiv Karban Betemo Yolam. There's this idea that the Olam Haba is, I'm sorry, this world is a like a temporary dwelling, is like a hotel, and that the world to come is like a house. And we know that because the Pasuk says Kirban Betemo Yolam, which means that their inward thought is that their houses should continue forever, right? Al tikre kirbam el kivram. This, don't read kirbam, but rather kivram, meaning that, right, that the grave, right? Kirbam betemo yolam, that the grave is like referred to as the kind of the permanent dwelling. The idea is here that the bracha was that he should stay in his temporary house rather than in his permanent house, right? The grave is the permanent house. So his bracha was, you should stay in your temporary house, meaning you should live a long life. You should stay in this temporary place, Olam Hazeh, which is like an Ushpiza, rather than being in a permanent house, a grave. Levalvel peturcha bivni uvinasa. I'm sorry, levalvel peturcha, that was that you are your table should be all confused. And he says, no, that meant B'nai Manasseh. Your table should be confused. It means you should have a loud, excited Shabbos table where everyone's talking. You should have lots of kids. And you shouldn't live out the year. That sounds pretty bad. That means that was a bracha that your wife shouldn't die so that you end up marrying a second wife and having a new Shana Rishona. Right? Because the Pasuk said, the Pesukim, there's this concept in Halacha of a Shana Rishona that you don't go out to war your first year. So when he said that you shouldn't live out the year, you shouldn't have a new year, he meant you shouldn't have a new Shana Rishona with a second wife. Okay. That's the end of that story. Rav Shimon bar ben Chalafta.
Why isn't it such an unclear matter?
Why isn't it just, I saw that there's some papers, I think they quote from the Zohar, that when you make a bracha that's so explicit, it could bring about an ayin hara or something like that. And so he said the bracha in a more hidden way, so it wouldn't result in any bad thing.
But do we find that by any other?
I don't know. I don't know. That's I don't know. Maybe this is the source for ayin hara or something like that. You shouldn't kind of make public brachos and things that are too positive and too hopeful. I don't know. Okay. Let's pick up the pace. I'm running out of time.
Maybe it was just the way it was explained.
Or maybe.
Maybe the guy really did want, you know, it's like, you know, go ahead and say something. Well, he didn't really mean that. He meant good things for you.
Right. Well, that's what he's saying. That's what he's saying. Right.
His father placating his kid.
Right.
Like, oh, the rabbi's not so bad. Like, don't, you know.
Well, I would imagine that's really, they really did have the right intentions. Why would they say to this poor son of Shmuel Yochai all these terrible things? I assume that they were talking. That was just the way they talked. They were very smart. He right. They were said that these were chachamim. These were anshei. What do you say? He referred to them as the reason he told them to get a bracha was their anshei shel anashim shel tzura. These are very, very smart people. So there was something to that. Okay. Shimon bar Chalafta iftar minei derav. So Shimon bar Chalafta left Rav. Amar lei. And they changed the gears here to Bray. He said to his son, Zil Gabe Duvarchucha. He said to his son, go and get a bracha. Amrulay. So the bracha he gave was Yehirava. Hashem's blessing should be. Hashem should be his will. Go to Vayesh, go to Vayesh. That you should not become embarrassed and you should not embarrass other people. Also Gabe Avua. He came to his father, Amrulay, my Amrulach. He said, what did he tell you? Amrulay, Muin Baalmahu. He said, he didn't give me such a bracha. It was just kind of a. You know, he just said something not so impressive. Amrulay birchacha birchasa. So he said, no. In fact, that was a very big bracha. This idea of you should not be embarrassed, you should not embarrass others, is a big deal. That was actually a very lofty bracha. Debircha nekudshabrichu Yisrael, because in fact Hashem blessed Klal Yisrael in that way. Vitana ba dechsiv and vitana ba, and he repeated it. Right, that Hashem said this bracha not only once but twice. Tichsiv v'achaltem achol v'sova. This is a pasuk in Yoel. V'achaltem, this is where Hashem's blessing, saying v'achaltem achol v'sova. You should eat lots and you should be satiated. V'yualtem v'lo yavushu amigu yolam, and my nation should not be embarrassed. V'yidatem ki b'kerav Yisrael aniv, and they should know that I am with them. V'lo yavushu amigu yolam, and it repeats that my people should not be embarrassed. So the fact that Hashem repeated that bracha shows that it's a very lofty bracha. Okay, the next part of the mission was that a woman is allowed to do her makeup on Chol HaMoed. V'osa isha takshiteh. Tan Rabbanan, Eloin takshite nashim, kocheles upokeses umavira. That she can put on eyeshadow, upokeses, she can like kind of remove extra hair or split her hairs, umavira, and she can... Mavira srak al panad. She can put kind of like this rouge, I don't know how you pronounce it.
Rouge.
On her face to kind of color it. Vika Damri, another version is Mavira srak al panad. She could put lime on her face. Mavira srak al panad shalmata. She could do it on the lower parts of her body. Debitu Rav Chista mikashta ba'anfe kalasa. So the wife of Rav Chista, she did these things. She would do this makeup and do it in the presence of her daughter-in-law. Yosef Rav Huna Bar Chinina kamed Rav Chista. So Rav Huna Bar Chinina came to Rav Chista, her husband. V'yasev v'kamar lo shanu el yalda v'azakeinu lo. So he said, this dispensation the Mishnah gives for a woman to put makeup on El Chol Hamoed, that's only for young women who benefit from this, where they really enjoy putting on makeup, and not for someone as old as your wife. So Amrulay, so Rav Chisda said, Ha'elokim. So he exclaimed, he said, no, absolutely not. Afilu imcha, even your mother. Va'afilu ima dimach, and even your grandmother. Va'afilu omedes al-kivar, even a woman who's got one foot in the grave. He says, even older women appreciate putting on makeup, making themselves look nice. As the popular saying goes, he says that a 60-year-old is like a 6-year-old, l'kal tavla riata, for purposes of, for purposes of like music, of kal tavla riata, I think Rashi explains, is like the sounding of the cymbals. Meaning even old women appreciate things like this. Okay, Rav Yehuda Amar lo sasud. So Rav Yehuda said that you should not put on lime. Tanya Rav Yehuda Omer isha lo tasud mivnei shanivu hula. The process of putting on lime is something that in the long run, after you take it off your face, makes you look good. But the process itself looks very ugly when you have the lime on your face. And so Rav Yehuda said on Chol Hamoed, because it looks ugly when you actually do it, you shouldn't do it at all. Even though after you take it off, it's going to make you look better. Umodar Rabbi Yehuda besid sheyachol al kaplo b'moed shetofalto b'moed. Shafo pisha matzir hiachshav smechi u'achar zman. But Rabbi Yehuda is moda, he agrees, he agrees that if it's the kind of stuff that you take, you could put it on and then while it's still chol moed, take it off, then you can do that, because even though she's going to be upset for the time being while it's on because she doesn't look nice, but it's going to turn out for the good after she removes it, and then she'll be able to benefit from it on Yontif, on Chol Hamoed. It'll cause extra simcha. So the Gemara then challenges it and says, "Umi isli Rav Yehuda hai svara?" Does Rav Yehuda really hold of this idea that we look at the long-term simcha even though it's going to cause pain in the short term? But tonight, then we have a Mishnah that says, "Rav Yehuda omer nifrain mehen mipnei shemetzar," that you can... This refers to the fact that on around the holiday times of the non-Jews, you can collect money from them, right? It's going to cause pain to the non-Jew to have to pay back the loan to the Jew, and you can, so therefore you can collect money from the non-Jew around this holiday time, because you want to kind of make him a little bit miserable or when he's being over to Avodah Zarah. So it's appropriate to collect the debt from a non-Jew because it's going to cause him pain. So Amru lo, but the people who contradicted Rabbi Yehuda's position that you're allowed to collect the debt, Amru lo, afa pisha meitzer achshav, sameach hua achar zman. In the long run, meaning he's going to pay you back, so for the moment it's going to hurt him a little, but an hour later he's actually going to feel a sense of relief that he no longer has the debt, that he's free and clear of any debt. And so they responded to Rabbi Yehuda by saying, maybe for that reason you should not collect your debts around the time of the non-Jewish holidays. So that's a problem, because we just said that Rabbi Yehuda recognizes the idea that the woman's allowed to put on the makeup, even though it's going to be painful for her emotionally, because it's going to make her look bad, because once she takes it off, it'll make her look better. But that's against what appears to be Rabbi Yehuda's position with respect to collecting debt, where he seemed to say you could collect the debt from the non-Jews around the time of their holidays, because that's going to make them feel bad, not thinking or not recognizing the fact that an hour later they're going to feel better that they were cleared from the debt. So apparently Rabbi Yehuda looks at the short term rather than taking into consideration the long term. So I'm Rabbi Nachum Bar Yitzchak Hanach Luchos Moed Dekuhum Meitzar Achshav V'Sameach Achar Zman Ninu. So Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak says, no, when it comes to the halachos of Chol Hamoed, all the halachos of Chol Hamoed recognize the fact that we look at the kind of long term, because we allow cooking on Chol Hamoed. Cooking in the short term is going to cause extra aggravation. You have to go out of your way to cook. It's a pain in the neck to cook. And we allow it because the long term, meaning after you finish the cooking and eat the food, that will be something that's pleasurable. And so when it comes to Chol Hamoed, it seems to be we tend to kind of take the long view, and even Rabbi Yehuda, who didn't take the long view with respect to these halachos of collecting debts prior to the non-Jewish holidays, he will take the long view with respect to Hilchos Chol Hamoed. Ravina Amar Kusi Lian Piron Liola Meitzer. Ravina says, no, you don't have to, in fact, Rabbi Yehuda held that when it came to collecting a debt from a non-Jew, it's not true that an hour later they're going to feel relieved. Their paying back the debt is going to keep them in a bad mood all day, and that's what Rabbi Yehuda had in mind.
Because they're not going to have money for their own holiday.
Because they're not going to have money readily available. Yeah, yeah. I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Benosi sor shigilu pirkan v'ligilu shanim anios tofos. I'm sorry. Benosi sor shigilu pirkan v'ligilu shanim. Jewish girls who have already started to reach maturity, physical maturity, but they have not yet hit the age where that would happen, meaning Jewish girls who reach physical maturity prematurely. Oh. So it would cause hair to grow on their bodies in places that it would be embarrassing for them to have the hair there, and they would want to remove the hair. So anios tofos osan besid. The poor girls, they would use sid. Sid is lime, I think, right? To get rid of the extra hair. Hmm? They say lime there?
Lime,
okay. Ashiros, the wealthier ones, tofos osan besolas. They would use flour, fine flour, to get rid of the extra hair. Benos melachin b'shemen amor, and the princesses, meaning the really wealthy ones, the royalty, they would use oil. Shenemar shusha chadashim b'shemen amor, the pasuk from Megillas Esther that says that they would do, you know, bathe in shemen amor, in oil for 6 months. My shemen amor, what is shemen amor? Rafuna barchia amar satris, which is like a type of perfume. Rav Yirmiyah bar Ami amar shemen zayis sholevi shlish. It means olive oil that hasn't yet matured or fully ripened. Tanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer on Pikton. So Rabbi Yehuda says that on Pikton is Shemen Zayis Shalevi Shlish. This is another word that's used for Shemen Zayis Shalevi Shlish, premature or unripened olive oil. V'lama Sachin Osam. Why did they use this on their body? Meaning, what utility did this substance have? Shemeshir or Shemeshir es haseyar u'ma'adein es habasir, removes the hair and it causes the skin to become very supple or very moist and soft. Okay, Rav Bibi Havle Barta. So Rav Bibi had a daughter, Tafla Ever, and he spread, or I think she spread this lime or on her one limb at a time. Shakol ba dalan me'azuze. And as a result, he was able to marry her off for a very positive dowry. He got a lot of money for her, so to speak, because she was so beautiful. She had put this kind of substance on her skin. Hava hahukusi b'shivavusei davoi barta. There was a non-Jew who lived in that neighborhood that saw that Rav Bibi did so well with his daughter using this substance. So tafla b'chad zimna umesa. And he spread this material on her, and she died. So Amar katla bibi lebarsi. So he said, Rav Bibi caused the death of my daughter. Amar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman explained, Rav Bibi deshasi shichra bayin bansei tifla. So Rav Bibi, who would drink a lot of beer, so this was actually good. What was it? The Sheikhar Magala Sarah. Yeah. So Bayan bin Seitafla. So his daughter needed this because apparently, I guess he was drinking the beer. Maybe she was also drinking the beer. I don't know. Somehow the fact that he was drinking the beer caused her to grow a lot of hair and caused her skin to be very rough. And so therefore she needed this lotion. She needed this on her. Anan Dosha Sinan Shekhra lo bayin bin Sintifla. But us, we who don't drink beer in our homes, our girls don't grow hair and don't get very rough skin, and then they don't need this tifla.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's probably the